staying right here until this guy is released.
Let the police car through if they release.
Welcome back, everyone. It's Todd Zwillick, and this Sunday is Free Speech Day in California. It marks the anniversary of the protest that started the free speech movement at the University of California, Berkeley in 1964. Mario Savio was a leader on that day.
We must really feel very, very sorry for these poor policemen here, you know. It's very like, you know, Adolf Eichmann. He had a job to do. He fit into the machinery.
Bravo!
Very good.
That's Mario Savio speaking to a crowd from the top of a police car on October 1st, 1964, protesting the arrest of a left-wing activist at Berkeley. Now, this week was supposed to be Free Speech Week at UC Berkeley, a completely separate and controversial four-day event full of far-right speakers, organized and bankrolled by activist and provocateur Milo Yiannopoulos.
What I try to do is be provocative and entertaining and blow open the fire doors, if you like, so other people feel a little bit more brave, a little bit emboldened to discuss their points of view in freer language than they would otherwise feel able to do.
The idea was to fight back against what conservatives feel is a stifling of their speech on liberal campuses in America. Milo planned to give a free speech award in Mario Savio's name, and that idea did not go over well with Mario's widow and fellow free speech activist, Lynn Hollander Savio.
Well, I was really appalled because Mario didn't stand for free speech. You can say anything you want anytime and not consider the consequences and the impact that your speech has on the people you're talking to. He believed that you had a responsibility when you speak.
In the end, that award never happened. Free Speech Week was canceled last week. The small student group behind the event said the school was putting up too many barriers for their speech, while the university said they were following the same protocol they do for all student events. Lynn Hollander Savio was a student in the crowd at UC Berkeley in 1964 when Mario Savio spoke. They weren't yet married, and she eventually became part of the free speech movement herself. Lynn says she supports Milo Yiannopoulos' right to free speech, but that she rejects his style, which she calls irresponsible.
I think that Milo, as long as he does not transgress the boundaries set by the courts, has a right to speak. And the university has a right to set the time, place, and manner of that speech. But Milo does something else, which I haven't heard because I've never seen him talk in person, but I understand that he attacks individual students by name, reveals their contact information, and invites harassment and attacks upon them. This is a really questionable use of free speech, and I have a great deal of trouble trying to resolve the contradictions between a free speech position and those kinds of attacks.
Well, the university was confronted with some dilemmas here, of course. UC Berkeley is one of the epicenters of champions of free speech, of course, but somebody like Milo comes to campus, and the leaders of the administration found themselves under pressure from students to, if not silence, to marginalize Milo Yiannopoulos and some of his cohorts.
Yes, I think the university was between a rock and a hard place. Whatever they did, they were going to get people angry. I applaud that they did set things up so that Milo could speak. Of course, the group that was sponsoring him failed to do any of the required things that are necessary to present a speaker. I've been presenting a speaker yearly at the university. We presented the Mario Savio Memorial Lecture and the Mario Savio Young Activist Award. And you always have to make deadlines and give deposits and negotiate with them about what space is available when and so forth. And the idea that you can just come in and say, we want to be here at such and such a date, and, you know, we'll come back at that date and see you later. I mean, that's absurd.
Lynn, there's no doubt that Milo Yiannopoulos has First Amendment rights like everybody else, but people have sort of pointed out that his success, to the extent that he's had some in pop culture, is his role of the provocateur, his willingness to sort of throw back in the faces what a lot of people see as liberals' discomfort with ideas that they disagree with. And so that he's up there as sort of a satirist. Maybe he doesn't believe everything he says, but he's pointing up the weakness of liberals for hearing ideas that they don't like.
Well, I think you're using the term idea very loosely, because it's not Milo's ideas that are the problem. I disagree with them, but it's the name calling and the attacks on individuals that seem inappropriate in a college community where people have to relate to each other.
To take the argument of some of Milo's supporters right now, for the sake of our discussion, I think they might say that his type of provocation wouldn't have any currency if things like safe spaces at colleges and places where people didn't want to hear speech or ideas they don't like weren't so common.
I think there's a real issue in that some people in the younger generation have not realized why free speech is so necessary, and so necessary for them, even if they are provoked. And unfortunately, they're young and they rise to the bait.
It sounds like you're fundamentally uncomfortable with the idea of the safe space on a college campus.
I agree. I'm not comfortable with the idea of safe space on a college campus. I think that it's important for students to experience themselves as able to take hurts. The African American students who marched in the South had to put up with tremendous abuse. And they did it. They were fearful. They had showed a great deal of courage. And we would not be as far along as we are today if they had said, you know, I can't participate in these marches because it hurts my feelings to be, you know, yelled at with the N-word and the other things that the people were yelling at them. So I think this idea of safe spaces is not a good one. But on the other hand, when you are on the campus, that is your home, and you are hoping that the other people whom you deal with will also consider it their home, and you're part of a family in a certain way. The point is individual responsibility, really. Milo should not be stopped by the state or by people shouting him down, but he should be stopped by his own individual sense of responsibility to act in a moral and ethical manner. And I don't feel he does.
And so if he doesn't have a sense of individual responsibility, where in your view does that place the limits on his speech? Or does it simply put the onus on the listener to walk away and leave him alone in the public square to talk to himself?
I would like to see students and other people develop a response which is both confrontational, but that allows him to speak, whether it's turning your back on him, whether it's walking out of his speeches, whether it's mooning him, or, you know, committing some other kind of mockery. We have to be more creative than just saying, "You can't talk."
How important do you feel it is to allow people with awful ideas to expose themselves by presenting their awful ideas?
I think that is extremely important. I think it was better for the country to see the white supremacists rally in Charlottesville and to see what they're really like, rather than having them hide away and claim to have a virtue and a righteous position that they don't have. Better to turn the rocks over and let what crawls out crawl out. Also, better to let them have a feeling that at least their ideas are being heard and being rejected, and not delude themselves with the idea that, oh, if we could just communicate our beliefs, then everybody would be on our side.
Lynn Hollander Savio, I want to thank you for spending this time with me.
Thank you for having me.
Lynn Hollander Savio is a veteran of the free speech movement at University of California, Berkeley, and the widow of free speech leader Mario Savio.
On Notes from America, we have conversations with people across the country about how we can truly become the nation that we claim to be. Each week, we talk about race, our politics, education, relationships, usually all of them, because everything's connected. And you, our listeners, are at the center of those conversations. I'm Kai Wright. Join me on Notes from America, wherever you get your podcasts.